the more conscious, the more spaciousness there is in your awareness, the more you can be in social action, more mm-hmm. of the time, until mm-hmm. finally, like a Gandhi or somebody like that, can be in social action almost all the time. And through his spinning and through his meditation, can just keep the thread going so he doesn't get lost.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, when you get lost, when is the fire going to burn you, and when is it going to purify you? And finally, there's nothing else to do but do what you can to relieve suffering. But unless you have the spaciousness, the awareness around it, so you don't get lost in identifying with being the doer, you keep creating more of the suffering. And that's the higher wisdom that makes social action such an interesting phenomenon, because everybody gets sucked in. I get sucked in all the time. Because every time I give a lecture and I talk about doing social action, people come up and say, "It's so wonderful you're doing that. You're so good." And you know, you just keep getting fed for being responsible, caring about things. And for me to say, "Look, I don't care, I'm just doing it," people, that's a horrendous thing. You know, I've learned how not to say things that I'm not supposed to say. Because at some level, it's all perfect. It's all doing fine.
Yes.
But you say perfect? Bangladesh is perfect. You know, the violence the starvation in Biafra is perfect. Iran is perfect. See, you don't say that anymore. You say, "Oh, it's terrible, terrible. We've got to do something about it." And inside, you appreciate the perfection of it, you know.
Yet you appreciate with compassion. That is, the compassion never leaves.
Well, compassion is the balance of those two things. Mm-hmm. Or what I call a balance of the heart and the head. Because the head, the sixth chakra, sees the perfection. The heart is the link to the humanity, and the heart is constantly going out for and feeling the suffering and identifying with. See, the fourth chakra isn't emerging with. The fourth chakra still keeps the entity separate. It's an empathic relationship. It's the first one of, say, brotherhood or humanhood or something like that. The sixth chakra is already getting close to the one. It's standing back and seeing the perfection. And the balance of those two mm-hmm. is really where the secret of the game is. And when you have those perfectly balanced, your every act is compassionate. The minute it gets off, the minute there's pity instead of just an appreciation, it's not compassionate anymore. It's all out of ego.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know.
Actually, that's where the other problem that comes in working with yourself versus working in social regions of activity. Namely that, you know, you wrote Grist for the Mill, which also affected my consciousness enormously. And it has one line, where you start a chapter by saying, "We are here to become nobody special."
Yeah.
And that just hit me in the heart.
Yeah.
But how do you, yeah. in trying yeah. to be nobody special, of course you don't try to be, but I don't know how to express it. But you are trying to be nobody special, yet you know that in social action, if you are somebody, it works better.
Yeah, but you're somebody in the sense of rent-a-roll. You see, you're a rent to somebody. You become somebody in that situation. You're not anybody. It's merely a functional somebodyness.
Mm-hmm.
Functionally, you're a teacher of physics. That doesn't mean you have to be a teacher of physics. You're just a being who happens to be teaching physics. So when I say to you, "Who are you?" you could say, "I'm a physics professor." But that's only one label. You're also a husband. You're also, you know, of Indian origin, you're also a man, you know, what labels? Which labels do you want to use?
That's right. And all those labels are really renter labels.
They're just labels, sure.
Mm-hmm.
You just go in and out of them.
Yes.
And your ability to die and your ability to grow with changing times, economics, politics, body, age, is all your ability not to identify. If you identify, you suffer. If you do not identify, you don't suffer. It's as simple as that.
Also, not only that, I mean, not only you suffer, but perhaps many other people suffer and are brought about by this labeling.
Everybody suffers.
Yes.
You just leave a sea of it behind you. That's all.
Yes. Yeah. So therefore, it follows that if we could have more conscious leaders, like, you know,
yeah.
just coming back to the political scene of
yeah.
today
yeah.
in America, if there were
yeah.
people in the State Department
yeah.
who were more conscious,
yeah.
Wouldn't that really alleviate a lot of suffering around the world, like in Iran?
Sure, Sure, but that's asking a lot. We just don't have wise men, wise people, and we don't have them because we haven't nurtured them in the first place, but also because we don't make the distinction any longer between authority and power. You see, Samat Guru Ram Das is a good example. He was the guru to King Shivaji in 1600. He lived in a little mud hut next to the palace, right? He lived there very humbly. But every time the king's ego got out of hand or the king lost it, Shivaji was there to kind of get him straight. We used to have that role, say, between academia and politics. Now we don't have it anymore. Academia now are bought into politics. They're a wing of politics. And they're experiencing power, McGeorge Bundy or a Kissinger or, all of these people are now part of the power structure. And you can't play that much with worldly power and stay conscious without being an incredibly evolved being, mm-hmm. really.
Yes, and that is very clear from what is coming out from Kissinger's role in the Iran game, that he could not keep himself separate.
No, exactly.
That's very unfortunate. Yet there is the feeling that, you know, in biology they say, well, if you are hitting upon something that's going to affect your survival, then you are prepared to evolve. So now we are talking about evolution of consciousness, and here we find that if some evolution of consciousness of the statesmen of our country does not work, does not operate, does not become, then total destruction of the humanity could happen.
Could happen, absolutely.
Therefore, isn't it just an automatic guess, scientific axiom, you might say, that an evolution is bound to occur because otherwise this species would be extinct? It's a survival
thing. Maybe it will be extinct. I mean, the question is, does your consciousness flicker when you think of that possibility?
Yes,
that may
be
the way it's going to go. I don't know how it's going to go. I'm not even sure I care how it's going to go. It's going to be interesting either way it goes. It may be that this crisis forces a raise in consciousness of political people. It may be that the way God designs the game, or the way we design the game, that consciousness of the environment forces the whole political thing to a higher level of consciousness, of compassion. Usually that kind of higher consciousness, which is a situational thing, can happen out of fear as well as out of wisdom. It's interesting, for example, in the Second World War in the United States, when there was a real threat to the security of this country, that we might get bombed and so on, suddenly there was incredible collaboration among people, and a more compassionate, higher thing came out of each person. It's all in there. Everybody's got the whole business inside themselves.
Sure.
But what are the situations that bring it out? It has to be that you don't feel you have the cards in your hand. You've got to have fear or despair. Those are the prerequisites for that game.
Mm-hmm.
And we as a society are so young and so arrogant, at least in the United States, we can't handle our fear without just getting more authoritarian.
We have never known it.
No, we haven't known it, you know. And those are the necessary prerequisites for that.
Yes.
It may well be that we'll just, we may be training a whole generation of wise human beings. That would be lovely.
I'm reminded of a story I just heard. Hans Bethe, he's a physicist, Nobel laureate again.
Yes.
And he was asked recently in a while he was giving a talk that he is an advocate of nuclear energy, that should be said first. And he was asked, shouldn't we start conserving energy, and doesn't that mean that we really have to reduce our lifestyles? And he said that, look, I was in Germany in the 30s, and that's what they tried to do in Germany, and look at what happened, World War. So it is very dangerous to talk about changing lifestyles or changing, bringing the standard of living down. That's the way he felt.
Oh, that's such a... Well, that's coming out of philosophical materialism. See, what fascinates me is that the voluntary simplicity, the simplicity that is going to be required from an economic and political and social... that's going to be forced on people, is exactly the kind of simplicity that becomes desirable as you spiritually evolve. See, simplicity, it's like when Gandhi said, civilization is the art of voluntary renunciation. That the more civilized you are, the more you let go of stuff you don't need in order for everybody to have something equally.
Mm-hmm.
That's a civilized... We are not yet a civilized people. we are an arrogant intellectual people. We are not a civilized people yet. And we may just be on the edge of it. We may become civilized before we destroy ourselves, or we may not.
Well, it has been a very enjoyable.
It sure has been. It's absolutely been a delight. Just a total delight. Really, really. I feel we meet in heart and mind, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.